Yo, what up, what up? You got the Zack Attack all up on this track. So leave your stuff and I'll hit you back, bitch. Peace.
Zack? It's Tiffany. I just called to, like, thank you for infecting me with ghost herpes or whatever. I seem to have given birth to some kind of horrible antichrist baby. And it's, like, climbing all over my walls and shitting on everything I own. You need to call me back, because this demon child is, like, half yours. And if you expect me to raise it on my own, you're, like, the stupidest person alive or something. So, yeah, call me back, dick.
Welcome to Ragnarok, your home of the Nerdpocalypse.
Welcome to this very special edition of Ragnarok, episode 4, in Nerdly Memoriam, or Return to the Peninsula of Death. I promised myself I wouldn't.
Let it out, Eric. You've got to let it out.
I have to be strong for this. I'm Eric.
I'm Meyer.
I'm Ed.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Alex. It's okay, Ed.
It's alright, we'll get through this. One step at a time. So, as you can tell, it's a very somber moment on Ragnarok. We're here today to pay our respects, to give our memoriams to some of our favorite nerdly media. So they've had their time, they've come and gone, and we appreciate them fondly, and today we'd like to give a bit of respect to those that have come and gone. So, we hope you relish in the memories of these wonderful series, just like we have. Thank you for joining us today.
I guess I might as well start. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here to remember the 2003 reboot of Battlestar Galactica, a television series that in its time was without peer in the science fiction genre. Through 4 seasons, 1 miniseries, and 2 made-for-TV movies, this show explored the after effects of an apocalyptic genocide and a mass exodus across the stars, constantly plumbing and challenging our notions of what it means to be human. Battlestar painted a stark portrait of human nature, its creators rendering mankind's promise along with its flaws. Throughout the series, its characters were at times tender and manipulative, selfish and brave, petty and resolved, but never for simple reasons. Though they were battling for survival, many were also quietly, or not so quietly, at war with one another and with their own demons. They made decisions and had to live with the consequences. They survived adversity through sheer determination and often fought hard for the smallest victories. From the irredeemable monsters to the reluctant heroes, the characters affirmed that the will to fight is intrinsic to human nature, a necessary trait for those who would survive in difficult times, but also a double-edged sword that could just as easily lead to ruin.
Oh! Poor Ellen!
Moreover, the creators challenged the very definitions of humanity to which their characters clung at the outset. At first, the Cylons were seen as walking toasters, machines that were imitating human behavior and form with software and artificial flesh. During the first season, these notions were undermined by Boomer, who struggled to understand what she truly was raised a number of troubling questions. Were her feelings for Chief Tyrell legitimate love, or were they affectations she assumed to maintain her cover? Were her fear and revulsion at the idea that she could be a Cylon the results of a contradictory program, or of a more human cognitive dissonance? Is there really a difference? These themes were echoed through Boomer's double, Athena, and her relationship with Hilo. By the end of season two, the audience started to get a sense of the war from the Cylons' perspective, and though their society consisted entirely of copies based on the same seven blueprints, they too experienced conflict with humanity, with each other, and with their own natures. This leitmotif culminated at the end of the third season and throughout the fourth, when five characters who previously believed themselves to be human were revealed to have been Cylons all along.
Leitmotif.
The creators of Battlestar Galactica also explored themes of faith and religious conflict. One of the many elements that divided the humans from the Cylons was the faith that each race professed. Cylons worshipped one god, while the humans were polytheistic. But the series delved deeper into the spiritual than simply acknowledging this. A mysterious force that was never seen had a significant influence on events through its agents, Head Six and Head Baltar. Was this the one true god of the Cylons, or some other superhuman intelligence?
Such a beautiful reversal.
The show never really gave us a conclusive answer, but I would argue that this was one of its strongest points.
So strong.
Add to this the repeated assertion that history is cyclical, a cryptic sense of destiny, and a string of prophetic dreams that trouble several characters, not to mention Starbuck, who is killed and resurrected with the location of Earth implanted in her subconscious. And you start to see how truly spiritual Battlestar Galactica became.
So spiritual.
The creators of the show, and everyone involved in its production, left us an indelible legacy, one that will continue to be relevant as long as humans live and love, fight, and die. Battlestar Galactica will live on, not just through its spin-offs, but in the hearts and minds of its many fans. So say we all.
So say we all!
That was beautiful, Ryan.
That was really hard for me, you guys.
That was beautiful.
You were strong, Ryan.
You were strong.
Who's up next?
I don't have the strength. I believe I'd like to say a couple of words myself. Ladies, gentlemen, strange bird-like creatures.
There are so many here.
Friends, both imaginary and otherwise. We are not gathered here today to mourn the loss of a wonderful television show, but rather to celebrate the joy that it brought us all. Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends was born on August 13th, 2004. Its father, Craig McCracken, was already well known for his other brainchild, the Powerpuff Girls.
Professor Antonio
Jojo. The program aired on Cartoon Network and was instantly recognizable for his attractive, unique art style.
So unique.
The show was also worked on by Lauren Faust, Craig McCracken's wife, who's responsible for the fantastic new series, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Excuse me.
That's so inappropriate.
I was coughing out of sadness. Anyway, Foster's Home saw Mac, a young boy, in his adventures with his best friend, a blue blob that he imagined up named, simply enough, Blue.
Such a creative name!
A typical episode would see Mac and Blue getting involved in crazy situations at the titular home, a gigantic mansion where imaginary friends are gathered in order to be adopted by children unable to imagine up their own friends. Mac and Blue were joined by their friends, Wilt, a lanky, friendly red creature who will do anything for his friends. Eduardo, a gigantic purple Spanish beast with the demeanor of a toddler.
So Spanish.
And Coco, a bird airplane palm tree creature who lays plastic eggs and can't say anything other than her own name.
Such a relatable character.
Other notable characters in the home included Madame Foster, the elderly founder of Foster's Home. Frankie, Madame Foster's daughter and pretty much the caregiver at Foster's, always stuck keeping the place in order. And Mr. Harriman, a large, distinguished rabbit who enforced the house rules.
So distinguished!
The house was also populated by many other background friends that would often get involved in their adventures.
Forget the background!
The show was praised by critics for its unique art style, lovable cast, and overall quality.
So much quality!
The show was nominated for a total of 17 Annie Awards.
That's a lot!
It is a lot.
I like Annie.
And also won 6 Emmy Awards.
That's a lot of Emmys, too. It's impressive.
Foster's Home brought its fans many memorable moments. Who can forget the episode Dinner is Swerved?
I couldn't. I will never forget it. Which one was that?
It's the one where the entirety of the house's population was stuck waiting at the dinner table for Mac and Blue, who had gotten themselves lost in the house.
Right, I couldn't forget that.
Or the episode Worldwide Wabbit, where the gang caught Mr. Harriman doing a silly dance for Madame Foster and published it on the internet for the world to see.
So silly. At least I didn't catch him masturbating.
The show was not only funny, but delightfully poignant. Each one of the main characters was endearing in their own way. Sure, Blue was more than a bit of a jerk at times.
I like jerks.
But he still retained a certain charm that appealed to the show's fans.
Yes, he did.
The series spanned 79 episodes, including 18 independent shorts, some specials, and a 90-minute television movie.
That's how many minutes?
90 minutes.
That's more than Emmys they won.
That is. That's impressive. It's as many as 90 tens.
That's a lot of tens.
I suck at math.
It's not 90 tens, though. It's 9 tens.
No. This is my eulogy.
90 tens would be 900 minutes.
Let him talk.
He's overcome with grief. He can't do math.
I'm sorry. I'm collecting myself here. The series finale aired. I'm sorry, I'm just too overcome right now.
It's all right, Eric, go on.
The series finale aired on May 3rd, 2009. The show shall live forever in the hearts of animation fans the world over.
Feels like just yesterday. Who's next?
I still have the strength.
If I could just have the strength. All right, Ed. You go. I would like to talk about our friend Lost. It's been slightly more than a year since we lost this dear, confusing, mysterious, and ultimately awesome friend. Lost ended its 6-year run on May 23rd, 2010. With a finale song called A Cop-Out. Some say Lost left us with so many questions and a cliched, unsatisfying ending that caused a wave of nerdy blue balls felt around the world.
I love my nerdy balls.
So blue. To these people, I say nay. Lost ended like it lived. With intense action, amazing characterization, fantastic suspense, and of course, close-up shots of eyeballs.
So many eyes!
So many eyes.
Lost began its journey on September 22nd, 2004. The show was so conceptually perfect and had such an amazing cast that ABC reportedly sank somewhere between $10 and $14 million into the show's 2-hour pilot. The studio saw characters that would enthrall us, seduce us, entertain us, and ultimately demand our attention on a weekly basis.
And they did.
These characters were familiar, comfortable stereotypes in many ways. The imperfect leader, the laid-back, chubby comic relief, the smooth-talking, down-home bad boy.
What about the polar bear?
But very quickly, these recognizable people were revealed to be riddled with neuroses and flaws, making them so real to us.
The polar bear was just riddled with holes.
But the true brilliance of the storytelling can be seen through how these character stories were revealed. Not all at once, but in a slow, exciting trickle.
Except for Anna Lucia's. She sucked.
She was awful.
Terrible.
We all make mistakes.
Actually, I'm not gonna... glad she's dead.
But when we first met John Locke, he was simply a middle-aged man with survival skills. But quickly, we learn he was confined to a wheelchair, raising one of the biggest questions of the show. How was Locke paralyzed?
How was he?
It's in season 3 that we finally found out, and the answer was incredible.
It was.
As time went on, this middle-aged man with survival skills became a tragic anti-hero, who was seduced by the powers of the island and became a symbol of the large destructive force lurking in the jungle. Yes, the plot was engaging and the mysteries were a huge draw of the show, but to me, the show's biggest strength was its characters. It was the characters and the actors who played them that made me care about the fact that there was a button you had to push every 108 minutes or the world would end.
And they pushed it. They pushed it so hard.
That doesn't mean that the freaking amazing plotline and atmosphere weren't a huge part of the show's success. Essentially, Lost told the story of a group of people whose fates were intertwined by the unexplained forces of dark and light located on the island. Over time, many tried to harness the forces of the island, the Dharma Initiative being the most notable. But these forces proved to be unexplainable by Dharma, the so-called others, and even the mysterious leader of the island, Jacob. This was the linchpin argue of the Lost finale failed argument. There was no definitive, clear answer as to what the light under the island was. To this I say, of course there wasn't.
But there wasn't.
Lost was a consistent battle between science and faith, and the show usually came down on the side of faith. How then can you expect a scientific answer to a mystical question?
You can't.
Impossible. I lost my faith.
The end of Lost was the brilliant revelation that the mysterious happenings of the island were beyond man's comprehension.
I think Vincent knew, though.
But he's a dog, not a man.
It's true, he is a dog! Such a dog!
Lost is the perfect example of a well-told story that paralleled human existence. It wasn't perfect, but it was loved. It began with a bang, engaged us, made us feel a myriad of emotions, and finished with the simple answer that there are no simple answers.
It's an oxymoron.
I miss it terribly, but I can't say I'm sad to see it go. It lived a full life and left us before it had a chance to lose its vigor. It didn't waste away like so many good shows, but died peacefully on a beautiful island with the closing of a single eye.
I have a single eye.
You do, Ryan.
You do. You're like Lost. Just as beautiful. And we'll see you.
All right. If it's all right with you all, I think I'd like to go next.
Go ahead, Alex. Go
ahead. Let us not shed tears for Smallville. I said don't shed tears for Smallville.
Sorry.
For that is not what the show would want us to do. It had time to say goodbye, make amends, and tie up loose ends. Things that many shows all too often don't get the chance to do. Smallville, you did so much for us. You taught us what it means to be human, what it means to have faith, and above all else, what it means to be a hero.
So heroic.
When a hero comes along.
Through Clark Kent, you presented us with an everyman gifted with extraordinary powers. You took Superman, one of the most unrelatable characters in pop culture, and made him human. This was not the story of a superhuman fighting crime, although that did happen.
Yeah, it did. It was cool.
It was the story of a boy struggling to come to terms with what he was, what he could do, and his place in the world. Something everyone can relate to.
I can relate.
I can so relate.
It would have been easy to tell a story about Superman, and it's been done many times. But telling a story about Clark Kent was something that was new and exciting.
So exciting.
We will miss the compelling dynamic that was created between Clark and Lex Luthor. Two people who started out as friends and slowly became enemies. The mantle of villain was something that was not carelessly thrust upon Lex. It was slowly built. He learned everything about being evil from his father, Lionel.
He never had a chance.
Who taught him what it really meant to be a bastard. At first, Lex truly wanted to do good, and that made watching the show all the more painful, knowing what the inevitable outcome would be. Lex's life and cold upbringing was wonderfully contrasted in the early seasons with the warmth and love of Clark's family. Jonathan and Martha Kent were the ideal picture of caring, loving parents. They did what was necessary for Clark, both in terms of raising him and protecting his secret. Jonathan even wound up inadvertently sacrificing his own life to save Clark at one point, damaging his own heart to get his son back. The saddest moment of the show for me was when Jonathan died. He was my favorite character, and I think the show lost its heart when it lost him.
That was clever.
Thank you.
Very clever.
Jonathan was Clark's moral compass. He was the one that Clark would look to whenever he was trying to figure out what to do, to decide how far he had to go to protect the world and, more importantly, the ones he loved. Jonathan's spirit and love for his family gave the show vibrancy. There were some annoying characters, but even they could not detract from the solid foundation that was built by the show's creators.
I wouldn't let them.
And although the show faltered, it stayed strong for most of its run. It was strong enough that when ratings started to falter in season 8, and the network decided to move the show to the Friday night death slot, it persevered.
It did. It was a strong show.
It did so surprisingly well that season 9 was renewed. Well, that the show was picked up in season 9 for a 10th and final season.
Hallelujah.
Smallville, you may have gone on a little too long, but you left us with many, many memories. The show took the simple premise of Superman as a kid and created something wholly unexpected and heartwarming, while at the same time exciting. It was, in the end, the story of a human, not a Superman.
You're a Superman, Alex.
Thank you. We are all Supermen. We're all Superman.
I don't think I can do it, guys.
Meyer, you can do it.
Be strong.
Be strong.
Okay.
Let it out, Meyer.
Let it out. You gotta let it out.
You have to.
Why the Last Man? A story about a man, his monkey, and lots of boobs.
Oh, so many boobs.
What wasn't there to love?
I don't know. Definitely not the boobs.
I love boobs.
They're so good.
Who cares if the mystery of why all the males in the world died was never fully explained?
I don't.
The mystery didn't make the book.
The boobs did.
It was the characters.
Them too.
Yeah. They had so many alternate theories.
I mean, the characters had boobs.
You can just pick your own.
It's the characters that I will greatly miss. Alas, Yorick. How I will miss your humor and your vast knowledge of pop culture.
So vast.
You were truly an underachieving slacker's role model.
And a Shakespearean reference.
Yes, he was.
Sure, you didn't get as much sex as I would have thought the Last Man on Earth would get. So, thank you for ruining that fantasy.
I'm sure he'd say you're welcome.
However, you made up for the lack of sex with a vast amount of poop getting thrown at your face.
So much poop. Almost as much poop as boobs.
Thank you, Ampersand.
Oh, Ampersand.
Thank you for your...
Poop is just boob upside down.
Thank you for your feces-flinging, plague-surviving skills. I shed a tear when Yorick fed you that poisoned grape to end your suffering.
Such a small crack.
Yorick also put it best when he surrounded by a bunch of clones of you. He said, 100 monkeys later, and they still haven't gotten him right.
Oh, I wish I had 100 monkeys.
Me too. Although that would probably be a lot of poop.
You.
Quite a lot.
We're a one in a million. Genetically mutated capuchin.
Well, really, he was like 1 in 100. I'm sorry. Continue.
Agent 355, or as others call you, 350. You are the epitome of badassness.
It's epitome.
He's sad. Give him a break.
I'm sorry, Eric couldn't do math either.
Eric can't do math and Meyer can't do English. That's why we're so sad.
It's a good thing I don't have to do social studies right now.
I can't do science.
You are the epitome of badassness. You wielded a collapsible baton with the skills of a ninja.
She did.
You were given a very difficult task. Keep the last man on Earth alive.
And he just made it harder.
And York made the task that much more difficult with his recklessness. You're right, Ryan.
But wait, way to spoil it.
Through your years together, you fell in love with one another. You were soulmates. Then...
Ebony and Ivory.
Then the minute you two confessed your love for each other, a crazy Israeli commando put a bullet in the middle of your head.
That's the worst place for a bullet.
I think everyone took that hard.
Not as hard as she did.
But of course, York was devastated for the rest of his life. Then there's Dr. Mann, the expert geneticist who tried to clone herself and later had to help raise a bunch of her clones.
That must have been weird.
To say you had daddy problems would be an understatement.
She had daddy problems. So many issues.
And you had a cynical attitude towards love due to failed relationships, but however, you finally found love in a one-eyed Australian demolitions expert / spy.
It's almost like Ryan. I'm not Australian.
Or a demolitions expert.
Or a spy.
And he's not a spy unless he's a really good one.
But I can't really tell you or I'd have to kill you.
By the end of the story, there was a lot of you to love.
Is that a fat joke?
It's a clone joke.
Oh.
Because there's a lot of clones.
Right.
Then you have other characters. Like York's two Beths. One was a bitch. And the other had a huge scar across her face.
So many Beths.
And York's daughter Beth Jr. as well. What was with York and the name Beth? But never mind. Then this hero, York's older, one-boobed sister.
That's 50% less boobs than most of the other characters.
Who went from crazy Amazon trying to kill York to becoming his ex-girlfriend's lover, which...
That was kind of weird.
It was kind of weird.
It's strange.
She was also a Shakespeare reference.
While on the subject, the Amazons were pretty cool.
Yeah.
And they were excellent antagonists. I already mentioned her, but Alter, the Israeli. While not an Amazon, she was a one-woman killing machine and a person everyone loved to hate.
Bitch.
And then who couldn't like Toyota?
Who couldn't?
A mercenary ninja?
And a car.
Instant awesomeness.
She's like a transformer.
Are we ever gonna see a movie adaptation? I don't know. Do I want to see a movie adaptation? Not really.
Michael Bay would probably direct it, and it would be terrible.
There'd be
so many explosions.
Something will definitely be lost in translation. Why The Last Man is a fantastic comic, and I'm very sad to see it end.
Well said, Meyer.
I love you, and I will miss you. Why? Fuck communism!
Fuck communism!
Fuck communism!
Fuck it up, and stupid red asshole!
Fuck it evenly enough for every member of it.
Boobs! Lesbians!
Well. We're going to compose ourselves, and then we will be right back.
Give me the razor! Give me the razor!
No, fire, stop it!
Don't. Turn it on.
everyone, and welcome back to Ragnarok, episode 4. We'd like to thank you for dealing with us during all of that.
I'm better. I erase that from my memory.
Yeah, I feel so much better now that we've talked that out.
Actually spent the last couple of nights with Meyer in the hospital. He's been on suicide watch.
Yeah. I'm on pills.
It's alright, because he only cut across the street and not down the road.
Yeah, yep. Meyer, you did that the wrong way.
Just to cry for help.
Mm-hmm.
Do it better next time. Don't half-ass it.
I fail at everything.
Alright.
So, we are back, as previously stated, and it's about time that we heard a review of The Rocketeer, is it?
Yep.
Well, Alex, I'm going to hand this one over to you.
Thank you, Eric. Ladies and gentlemen, The Rocketeer flies again.
Hooray!
Hooray! Unfortunately, at least in my opinion, there's no new movie coming out, although this year does mark the 10th anniversary of the Disney flick. But comic publishers IDW are releasing a 4-part miniseries honoring the late Dave Stevens' iconic character, The Rocketeer Adventures. The first 2 parts are currently available, and if you're a fan of The Rocketeer, or you like classic pulp stories, I highly suggest you pick it up.
I don't like pulp in my orange juice.
No, this is pulp stories, not orange juice.
Pulp fiction.
And besides, I like orange juice with
pulp. I like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, like Pulp Fiction, that kind of pulp. The Rocketeer was first created by writer-artist Stevens in 1982. It ran as a few issues, and then the story was wrapped. A second arc was started by Stevens in the late 80s, but wasn't finished until Dark Horse Comics published the 3rd and final issue in 1995. Disney also jumped onto The Rocketeer, making a film about the character in 1991 that combined the 2 stories that Stevens wrote. Unfortunately, Stevens passed away in 2008 of leukemia. The story of The Rocketeer follows Cliff Secord, a pilot in Los Angeles in the late 1930s, sometimes the 1940s. Cliff found an experimental rocket pack, strapped it on, and became The Rocketeer.
Yeah.
But Cliff's a bit of a knucklehead. His mechanic friend Peavy is always getting him out of jams and fixing his rocket. And no, that's not a euphemism. The one that helps Cliff fix his rocket is his way-too-hot-for-him girlfriend, Betty, that Stevens modeled after a 1950s pinup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Many of the storylines revolve around someone kidnapping Betty and Cliff having to rescue her. And many stories also involve Betty being very scantily clad. She is a model/actress, after all. And Cliff getting worked up and overprotective about it. And if I were him, I'd be pretty protective of her, too.
Yeah.
Even though Stevens died, this new series is giving other artists and writers in the comic world a chance to take up his character, and they're doing great things. The new series presents vignettes about the Rocketeer, so each issue contains 3 or 4 short stories instead of 1 long narrative. There's also a pinup in each issue, which I guess if you don't mind tearing your comics apart, you could put on your wall or something.
Is it a pinup of his girlfriend?
No, unfortunately not.
Is it the Rocketeer and posing like, oh yeah, like,
yeah,
oh yeah.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
The helmet was very strategically placed.
While I was questioning the format at first, it quickly grew on me. It's a great way for many different artists and writers to present their visions of this iconic character that I love so much. Each issue also features an amazing cover by Adam Hughes. They're gorgeous. I cannot wait for someone to make the first one into a poster. I will buy it. Without hesitation. It's gorgeous. The stories in the comics also really ring true to Stevens' original work, which, by the way, was also compiled into a single hardcover volume by IDW last year. So if you like the miniseries, I would suggest picking that trade up. They capture the characters well, and they also capture the whole spirit of The Rocketeer. High-flying fun. I mean, it's not really a series that you're supposed to take too seriously. It's based on pulp shows and stories from the 30s and 40s, so everything's over the top and kind of kitschy, but that's what makes it so endearing to me.
I take Timothy Dalton as a Nazi very seriously.
Well, okay, yes, Timothy Dalton as a Nazi was a very serious, dramatic performance.
Spoilers, by the way, in case you haven't seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
But sorry. You've had lots of time, so...
It's been 10 years. Shame on you. So, it's kind of like spoiling the end of King Kong at this point.
What happened to King Kong?
Don't tell me, I haven't seen it.
He dies at the end.
Fuck you.
I'm out of here.
Oh, God. As long as Beauty
you guys
killed
are
the
jerks.
Beast.
Oh, no. Beauty killed the Beast.
Oh,
guys, by the way, I'm watching this great movie. It's about... I just don't know what Rosebud is yet. It's a movie called Citizen Kane.
And... Oh, it's a sled.
You dick.
What?
Why would you... Oh.
Eris dies. All right.
Now that we've got that, we've got that off on that tangent.
That was Final Fantasy.
I have to say that IDW's willingness to publish this miniseries, which I will admit is kind of for an obscure character that many people probably don't care about, just cements in my mind why IDW is one of the best publishers in comics today. I mean, I still read Marvel, but when you pick up a Marvel comic, all you're getting is superheroes, and the same is true with DC. You know what you're getting when you pick up one of those labels. Sure, DC has their indie Dark Horse print, but even that is pretty mainstream by now.
Yeah.
IDW tends to publish a greater variety of stories, and also publishes a lot of series based on franchises that I like. It publishes Doctor Who stories, which I read every month. It was running The Angel by Joss Whedon, comics based on the show, but I think that got sold to another imprint. And they have licenses for many television shows and movies that I like. They have Star Trek comics and Transformer 2 and Ghostbusters. The same could be said, even more so, of Image Comics, which publishes The Walking Dead and a lot of other even more obscure and indie series.
Though, I don't know if Walking Dead's really obscure anymore.
Yeah, well, Walking Dead is not, but most of the other... But, I mean, it's still an independent publisher.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Probably,
yeah.
I'm probably wrong. I think Image does Scott Pilgrim. Oh, you did. I'm probably wrong.
I don't know.
Did Image do Spawn?
No, that was
McFarlane.
That was McFarlane.
Oh, yeah. McFarlane, I think that was Dark Horse.
Oh, was it? Did they have their own? I thought he made
his
own.
I think Spawn, he was on Dark Horse.
Well, yeah, I thought Spawn Image was McFarlane.
Was it Gen 13 or something? I don't remember.
I don't know. There's a lot. Anyway, I would wholeheartedly endorse the Rocketeer Adventures for anyone who likes the Rocketeer or pulp stories of that same kind. It's just a fun series to read. And honestly, who hasn't dreamed once or twice about strapping on a jetpack and taking to the skies?
I haven't. I mean, I have.
I haven't until just now. Now I'm so I'm going to dream about it.
I hope I go home and dream about wearing a jetpack.
That'd be awesome. I dreamed about it until I actually did it, and then I fractured most of the bones in my body.
Oh, so the jetpack was how I got here tonight.
You're a better jetpack pilot than I am.
Is that why
it's because I have two eyes.
Yeah, I had no depth perception.
Yeah, that's why the back of my ass and legs are charred.
I'm really disappointed, though, that in reality jetpacks aren't feasible.
Yeah.
So it's always in the future.
It would be great if the Rocketeer's jetpack was real.
Weren't we supposed to have jetpacks by now?
We're supposed to have flying cars, too.
There we go.
And fills and pooed
form. I bought Meyer that
fills
whole book.
Fills and pooed form?
Yeah.
About jetpacks. Yeah. That's a good book.
And I like that book.
Yeah.
I saw a video recently, I think it was on YouTube, about the Rocketeer. Like, someone, like, on the free time did, like, a 3D...
Oh, yes. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, you can find that on YouTube. It's sort of like an honor of the movie, the 10th anniversary of the movie.
Yeah.
Sort of like a Saturday morning cartoon style thing.
We could probably just put a link to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the show notes. Check it out.
All right. So we'll be right back after this, and we'll be introducing the first episode of our brand new series. So stay tuned.
Hello, everyone. I'm Orson Welles.
Then why do you sound like Peter Lorre?
Because I can't really do an impression of Orson Welles. It just ends up sounding like Peter Lorre.
Ed, why don't you just read the intro as Peter Lorre, then?
Because it's a radio play. Orson Welles is the appropriate figure.
Whatever.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ragnarok is proud to present its very first audio drama. It's a murder mystery titled Dead of Winter. Our first episode is Prom Night. We hope you enjoy it. Feel free to leave comments and theories on our website or Facebook page. So, without further ado, Ragnarok and Petri Wine presents to you Dead of Winter, Episode 1, Prom Night.
I've lived in Pine Springs my whole life. It's one of those small towns you see on television, like on Murder, She Wrote. We are supposed to believe there's a murder a week, which is odd, because in a small town like that, you kill one person off a week, and you'll run through the entire population in a few years. I always wondered why people thought it was a good idea to live in that town. or to spend any time around Angela Lansbury. Everywhere she went, someone died. Now, if that's not suspicious, I just don't know what is. Now, I'm not saying Pine Springs is a town full of murderers, mind you. Just aesthetically similar. Similar folk. A similar way of life. We did, of course, have that bit of unpleasantness with Sarah Winter and whatnot. Yes, okay. We've had a few difficulties. But the business with Sarah Winter was by far the worst. As far as I know, it was never really resolved. Evans in jail, of course. But I firmly believe in his innocence. His conviction is something I have always regretted. I wasn't clever enough to get him cleared. I spoke to everyone involved, but the case was so damned convoluted, I couldn't prove a damn thing. Evan was the first person I spoke to about it all.
If I had my way, Hollister, I'd put you in the electric chair myself and pull the lever.
You do it. Put me out of my misery.
Sorry, Hollister. You're not worth going to jail over. Though it would be fun to watch you twitch, you murderer.
Just let me see my lawyer.
You got 30 minutes.
Evan, you look well, all things considered.
Yeah.
Can I offer you a piece of saltwater taffy? Mrs. Price made it.
No, thank you, sir.
Well, I'm going to have one myself. You're all going to regret missing out, Evan. Mrs. Price makes damn good taffy. Sure I couldn't persuade you?
I really don't want anything.
You're lost. It is your loss, Evan. Now, if I'm to represent you at trial, I need your complete honesty. Did you do the murders?
I'm not a murderer.
I'm very glad to hear it. I have read your statements, of course, but it's good to hear it from your own mouth.
Bullshit. Why would you believe me?
Can I share a story with you?
What?
A story. You know what a story is, Hollister. I'm going to tell you one. It's about me, about 30 years ago. I was living on a Mulhill Drive. I had just moved into the small yellow house at the dead end, a 52 Mulhill Drive. My first very own private address away from Mother. Granted, it was only 3 blocks away, but I lived on my own nonetheless, and I was excited about it. Now, at that time, 50 Mulhill Drive was occupied by an old trucker that everybody called Gubby Kane. Oh, everybody loved Gubby. He was one of those townies, you see, that can get away with being drunk all the time because that's when he tells the best stories. They're different each time he tells them, sure, but they're entertaining. Well, he was a character, and no one had a bad word to say about him. Except, the thing is, I didn't like Gubby. I couldn't tell you why at the time. I just looked at him and saw the devil. I wanted to keep it to myself, of course. Wouldn't want to be the hyena amongst giraffes. It's the way things were then. So I kept my mouth shut, and all the while just plain not liking Gubby.
What's your point?
The point, Evan, is that 5 years later, the sheriff at the time found that Gubby had heads in his freezer. Very pretty young blonde heads. Girls. Not a one of them older than 16.
What does this have to do with me?
Nothing. The story's about me. And how I am a very good judge of character. And when I look at you, I don't see the devil. Now, as I've said, I've read your statement, but I'd like to hear your story firsthand. It's going to take a lot of work to get the jury to buy it, and I want to make sure we cover everything.
Okay. It started with Sarah's murder. I wanted to know who killed her, because it sure as hell wasn't me. Even though everyone thought it was.
I wanted to know because everyone in town was staring at me like you looked at Gubby Kane. Especially her dad. But it wasn't just that. I wanted to know who killed her because I loved her.
Evan, I do believe you when you say you didn't kill Sarah. But do you really think it's wise for us to bring up a murder you're not even being accused of when you're being charged with two other murders?
But they're all connected. I'm not a murderer. But they're all connected.
Very well. I'll shut up and let you finish. Now, why don't you tell me about what you know about Sarah's murders?
Ralph and I were taking the girls to the Lumberjack Motel after the prom.
Ralph McCann? The missing boy? He's wanted for questioning too, you know.
I thought you were going to shut your mouth and listen.
So I was. Sorry, Evan. Sometimes I'm too fond of the sound of my own voice. Please continue. Now I'll button it.
It's cool. Like I said, we were driving to the Lumberjack Motel after the prom. We bought some booze and we were going to... you know.
Is this No Cure for the Innocent? I love them.
There's no better musician than Chris Lithium.
Come on, what about Modok and Torno? He plays circles around them.
Dude, you're an idiot. They're the same guy. Modok and Torno is just a stage name in a different band.
No.
He's right, Evan.
You're supposed to be on my side.
Since when are those the rules?
They've always been the rules. You're just too drunk to remember.
You are way drunker than I am. Speaking of drunk, we still have stuff, right?
Plenty. We've got a bottle of Jack. Some Bacardi for you.
Yum. Here we are, ladies.
Man, the Lumberjack Motel is such a dump.
Yeah, but it's cheap. I'm gonna head in and get a room for Mr. Webb.
That guy is such a creeper. He's always staring at my ass.
Why do you think I'm going in instead of sending you girls? Be right back.
Oh, it's you, Hollister. Good evening.
I'd like a room, Mr. Webb. Two double beds.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
I've got the cash.
Earned through nothing but old-fashioned hard work, of course.
Yeah, sure. Can I get the key, please?
Certainly. Two double beds, smoking or non-smoking?
What do you think?
Room 11 is the only double where smoking is allowed. Here you are. Enjoy your stay.
Oh, I will.
Room 11, guys and girls. Let's go.
And then we went to the room and partied for a while. Cass eventually passed out. Sarah went to the bathroom, and Ralph and I went outside to smoke.
And that was when?
Yeah. The last thing she said to me before she died was, I have to take a piss. All I did was laugh at her for breaking the seal.
Breaking the seal?
You know, when you drink, and then you have to pee. If you hold it in, you're fine. If you break the seal and pee, you're going to be peeing all night.
Oh.
And that was the last thing we talked about. Pee.
At least no one vomited.
Yeah. At least. Anyway, Ralph and I went outside to grab the bottle of Jack from my car. Dude, I don't think you're getting that tonight. Cass is out.
She's such a freaking lightweight. What does she have? Like two beers and a shot?
He's a devil. He's a devil. He's a devil in his own hometown. Excuse me, boys. Can I trouble you for a light?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks so much. So tell me, how was prom night?
Excuse me?
Well, it is prom night, isn't it? Haven't been stalking you, I promise. I just saw the tuxes and sensed that you were slightly intoxicated. I connected the dots.
Yeah, it was all right.
Good. Well, I should be going. Enjoy the full moon. It's particularly dangerous and beautiful tonight.
What a freak!
He had a rockin' mustache, though.
Hold up, Ralph. Is that Reverend Winter's car? Shit.
Dude, you're so screwed.
Shut up. How the hell did he know we were gonna be here?
You really that surprised? He's like creepy protective. Probably put like a tracking device or something in a bra. A
tracking device? Such an idiot.
Whatever. You're the one who's gonna die tonight if Reverend Winter finds
you. It's not funny. Let's just get the jack and go back to the room. He can't break in.
You won't have to if Mr. Webb lets him in.
Could you stop? You're not helping.
Look, I honestly don't care. I'm just messing. And I really have to pee. So you get the jacket, I'll meet you back in the room.
Whatever. Sarah? Sarah! Open the door, Sarah! Open the door! Sarah? Sarah! Sarah, open the... Sarah, what the hell was that about? Why are the lights out? Hello? Cass? Who's there? Where's the damn light switch? Oh my god. Sarah! Ralph! Cass, where are you? Sarah's hurt!
Dude, what are you screaming about?
Ralph, I think Sarah's dead.
What?
There was someone in here, and the room was dark, and... Look.
Holy shit, man, where's Cass?
I don't know.
Alright, what's going on in here?
Sheriff Barker.
Evan, what's all this screaming about?
Oh my god.
Is that Sarah Winter?
Ralph! Can you find her?
Reverend, stay down there! Webb! Don't let him come up here!
Sheriff, this isn't what it looks like.
I don't want to hear it, boys. Get on your knees and put your hands on
but
your
we
head.
Didn't...
On your knees!
Just shut up and do what he says.
And then he handcuffed us. He put me in his car and Ralph in the deputy's car. I could see Reverend Winter sitting on the stairs crying hysterically with Mr. Webb, who just looked pissed off that we were making him look bad. Eventually, I saw Sheriff Barker carrying Cass out. She looked like she was in a trance or something. And then they wheeled Sarah out on a stretcher. She was covered in hotel blankets.
Wrap it up.
Well, I suppose we'll have to finish this another time.
There's so much more to tell, though.
I'm sure there is. But I'll be back to hear the rest as soon as they'll let me. In the meantime, I think I'd better talk to everyone who was there the night Sarah died.
So you'll help me?
I'm going to do everything I can, Evan.
Thanks. You know, I think I'd like a piece of that taffy after all.
Alright, that was episode 1 of Dead of Winter. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we all did. You can stay tuned. In the next few weeks, we'll be premiering episode 2, Before and After. You can also comment on the story itself or anything we talked about. We'd love to hear what you people think about your Lost series. You know, it was hard for us to open up.
Very hard.
If you, you know, need someone to talk to, we're here for you.
Shoulder to grieve on.
Yeah. So you can comment on our website at ragnarok.com. You can like us on Facebook and leave us comments there at facebook.com/ragnarok. You can tweet us at ragnarok. And you can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and talk to us there, give us ratings and, you know, interact with us that way, because that's what we like.
We're very personable.
We are very personable.
Not me.
Well, except
for
most. Most of us are pretty personal.
4 out of 5.
All right, so until next time, I'm Alex.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Orson Welles.
No, you're not.
Sorry, I'm Ed.
I'm Iron.
And I'm Eric.
And this has been Nerdy in Nerdly Memoriam, or Return to the Peninsula of Death. Stay tuned, folks, and remember, the Ragnarok is nigh.
Oh no, Meyer's sad again.
Oh god, oh no, he's going for the razor.